So, on this very special occasion of the first day of Chaturmasya and the disappearance day of Srila Sanatana Goswami, which happened on Guru Purnima, which is the birthday of Srila Vyasadeva, so this is the original Vyasa Puja day, and of course, very special occasion of Srila Bhaktacharya Maharaj returning back home, back to Godhead, with the blessings of all the Vaishnavas. We'll be reading, continuing to read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 4, Sri Madhavendra Puri's devotional service. And we'll start with text 148 and go until text 151 with the purport. Madhavendra Puri wanted to leave Jagannath Puri because the people were honoring him as a great devotee. However, this threatened to hinder his collecting sandalwood for the Gopal deity. Sri Madhavendra Puri told all the servants of Lord Jagannath and all the great devotees there the story of the appearance of Sri Gopal. When all the devotees at Jagannath Puri heard that the Gopal deity wanted sandalwood, in great pleasure they all endeavored to collect it. Translation prepared by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Those who were acquainted with the government officers met with them and begged for camphor and sandalwood, which they collected. Purport. It appears that Malai Chandan, sandalwood and camphor were used for the Jagannath deity. The camphor was used in his aortic, and the sandalwood was used to smear his body. Both these items were under government control, therefore the devotees had to meet with the government officials, informing them of all the details. They attained permission to take the sandalwood and camphor outside Jagannath Puri. Hare Krishna. So we'll read all the texts one more time. Madhavendra Puri wanted to leave Jagannath Puri because the people were honoring him as a great devotee. However, this threatened to hinder his collecting sandalwood for the Gopal deity. Sri Madhavendra Puri told all the servants of Lord Jagannath and all the great devotees there the story of the appearance of Sri Gopal. When all the devotees at Jagannath Puri heard that the Gopal deity wanted sandalwood, in great pleasure they all endeavored to collect it. Those who were acquainted with the government officers met with them and begged for camphor and sandalwood, which they collected. So we continue hearing the description of ecstatic travels of Madhavendra Puri. And whatever pure devotee is doing is all ecstatic because he's on the mission from the Lord personally, right? He was not doing what he wanted to do. He was only doing what Gopal wanted to do. And so, this is amazing position of a pure devotee because he has empowerment from the Supreme Lord. And therefore, whatever he says, you know, it's like, you can imagine, he comes to Jagannath Puri, nobody knows who he is anyway, right? And Sannyas, you know, especially Madhavendra Puri, you know, Paramahamsa, Sannyasi, and does not necessarily carrying, you know, danda, this and that, but even if you carry danda, you know, you come to the place, nobody knows you, and you have no position, and who cares about you, you're next to nothing, right? But if someone's empowered by the Supreme Lord, then, you know, it's like the Lord within the heart of everybody tells, okay, he's representing me, so you better do what he says. And with great ecstasy people were doing in Jagannath Puri, you know, they just realized, okay, he's on the mission from the Supreme Lord himself. And this is the power of Krishna consciousness. You know, it's like Madhavendra Puri came to Jagannath Puri and he said, yeah, okay, I need camphor and sandalwood, which are very special, which are only used in the temple and only for the deity, Jagannath deity, you know, they bring it from long distance and it's very rare, it's very expensive. And Madhavendra Puri is just a sannyasi, right? He doesn't have money to pay for all of this stuff and it's really expensive. You know, it's like you come to the jewelry shop and you tell, okay, you know, God wants some of your jewelry. Can you just, you know, I can't pay for it. Can you give it for free? You know, just imagine the response, right? But this is something like that, you know, very, very expensive items, very rare items. But then he tells people, you know, what can I do? Gopal wants it. And so he told the story of Gopal. And people, you know, everybody whom he met from the within the hearts, they were, yeah, let's serve Gopal. Gopal appeared at Govardhan and reappeared. Right, and then obviously he spoke not just, you know, it just went like a wildfire. He just spoke with few people and they started talking, you know, through the word of mouth. It came to influential people and then those influential people, they went to the government officials, and Jagannath Puri is managed in this way even today. You know, there are, because it's huge operation, I mean, 100,000 people daily. Can you imagine? Well, maybe 100,000 on festival days, but, you know, it's like around 50,000 on regular days, what to speak of Rath Yatras. It's like huge, huge, unimaginable, huge operation. It's like more people visiting Jagannath Puri daily than, you know, all the people who come to Mayapur, for example. And I think it's around 20,000 a day now in Mayapur. It's also pretty good. Anyway, it's like so many people. And to manage all these, government officials are looking after the whole operation, you know, just to make sure there is no corruption and all this stuff. And so to get something like that, they had to talk to the government officials. And government officials, can you imagine, you know, he inspired everybody so much that he didn't even have to go directly and tell the story, right? The people whom he got inspired, they fired up the government officials to such an extent, and they said, yes, sure, we'll give whatever Gopal wants. That can be provided. So this is the amazing power of bhakti. And basically, if the Lord wants anything, then no one can stop, no one can resist, no one can say anything against. It will be done. You know, his will be done. And we can see contemporary examples like Srila Prabhupada, right? Going to the West, and he had heart attack, and then Krishna personally came and he massaged his chest. And he told him, go ahead, have no fear, right? Krishna cured him and Krishna told him, go ahead, have no fear. It will be done. I want you to do that, right? And so Srila Prabhupada came, and basically, you know, his message was very simple. God wants you to surrender unto him. Right? So, and everybody started surrendering. And even though Srila Prabhupada, you know, he had such a thick Bengali accent, people could hardly understand him. And nobody knew who he was, right? People were like totally ignorant. Who is he? Why does he have this, you know, thread on his shoulder? And Prabhupada had to explain, okay, this thread means, you know, the sign of someone who accepted spiritual master. Who is spiritual master? So he had to explain everything. Spiritual master who is representing God, who is God. So that's, you know, it went like that. But because of his empowerment, we can see amazing things were happening. So this is the principle that whatever God wants, no matter what anyone wants, it will be done. His will be done. The fresh example, we can see that so many devotees were praying so intensely for Bhakti Charu Maharaj to stay. But obviously, because Krishna and Prabhupada wanted him back home, back to Godhead, no one could stop, right? And actually, someone sent me his Vyasa Puja offering from 2012, and the last two paragraphs are so crystal clear. He's actually meditating on Srila Prabhupada, and he's begging Srila Prabhupada, can you please take me back? Right? He was really eager. So 8 years later, his wish got fulfilled, and no one could stop it. And I was thinking, incidentally, that because he's such an amazing example of pure devotional service from the beginning of his life, right? That being born in such a pure, pious family and fully surrendering unto Krishna and Srila Prabhupada and living the life free from blemish. And, you know, it's like yesterday the text Sutta Prabhu have read, the purport started with the statement that in this material world everybody is envious of each other, right? And unfortunately we can see that even our own society, which is supposed to be perfect, right? Like Hridayananda Maharaj jokes, he says that ISKCON is perfect, supposed to be. Right? So yeah, we're supposed to be free from envy because this is the thing which keeps us in this material world, etc., etc. But still we can see that this envy, jealousy creeps in, right? And then it manifests even in the mentality, my guru against your guru, you know, why your guru should be worshipped more than my guru, etc., etc. But we can, you know, put that aside. In case of Bhakti Charu Maharaj, he's already back home, back to Godhead, right? You know, he poses threat to nobody. So let's give few days of properly honoring this great saint. And I was thinking, you know, one thing we could do is to provide proper asana for Maharaj to sit on rather than just keeping him on the bare marble. You know, just little respect, at least for a few days we can give him. And whatever Krishna wants, it will be done. And we can see that because pure devotees are so focused on doing what Krishna wants. That's why Krishna, if they have any tinge of any desire for anything, Krishna is just rushing forward to fulfill those desires, like anything. And we can see that this pastime with the sweet rice that Krishna served Madhavendra Puri, sweet rice, right? And today we have the disappearance day of Sanatana Goswami, of course. We can talk for forever about this great saint, but one episode also connected to sweet rice and Terkadamba, how Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, they lived there and they compiled Upadishamrita, Nectar of Instruction there, and so many other scriptures. And of course, living under the trees, having nothing, and then Sanatana Goswami has his birthday. And Rupa Goswami is thinking, you know, I can't even properly honor my brother and do something for him. So what's the greatest gift Vaishnava appreciates? Prasadam, right? Vaishnavas have no interest in anything, but if you offer them prasadam, wow, they will show great enthusiasm. So he said, at least I want to give some nice prasadam as a birthday gift for my elder brother. And, you know, but they have nothing. Not even rice, milk to cook anything. But suddenly this little girl appears, extremely beautiful girl, and comes to Rupa Goswami, and she says, I can see that you're, you know, sitting here under the trees and you have nothing, so I wanted you to, you know, my mother sent you, me here with some sweet rice. And apparently Sanatana Goswami really enjoyed sweet rice. And Rupa Goswami very happily takes that pot of sweet rice and then, you know, comes to Sanatana Goswami and he says, you know, one girl from the village brought that sweet rice, so I'm really glad that it coincided with your birthday. So this is a gift for you. Sanatana Goswami says, okay, let's share it. So they take this sweet rice, and as soon as Sanatana Goswami tastes that sweet rice, then, you know, goosebumps appear on his skin and hair stand on end, and tears start flowing from his eyes, and he's shaking, trembling, and he says, what kind of sweet rice is that? You know, some people, when they take prasadam, they think there must be some drug inside, right? Because regular food cannot, you know, produce such ecstatic symptoms. He says, what kind of sweet rice is that? Who brought that? How did that girl look like? And then Rupa Goswami starts describing, oh, she had a blue sari, and her eyes were glittering like a sun, etc., etc., and Sanatana Goswami says, well, matching the description, it was Srimati Radharani. And I think it's not a good idea to engage her in our service. But it's not like that, of course. Of course, pure devotees, they always feel bad if the Lord is doing something for them because they only want to serve the Lord with no material desires. In the same way as Madhavendra Puri, he was so feeling so bad because Gopinath fulfilled his desire, even though he, you know, didn't want it. He realized it was, you know, his material desire, whatever. At least from his point of view, it was material desire. So, but then Gopinath fulfilled it anyway. So in this case, also Radharani fulfilled Rupa Goswami's desire, even though he would never want, none of them would ever want Radharani to serve them. So, yeah, we have all these amazing personalities, and today is Sanatana Goswami's disappearance day as well. And yesterday it was in America, so Bhakti Charan Maharaj's disappearance coincided with Sanatana Goswami's disappearance on the Guru Purnima, so there are no coincidences. Everything is as per Krishna's plan. And it's very interesting that all these great ISKCON saints, they depart from this world around Brahma Muhurta time. You take Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you take Sridhar Maharaj, many others. So they depart on very special times, on very special days. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Shishi Gonyatai ki jai. Gaur Govinda Maharaj departing on Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's appearance day, etc., etc. So, Sanatana Goswami Bhakti Charu Maharaj departing from this world on Vyasadeva's appearance day, Guru Purnima. So, it's very interesting. But, yeah, we might be thinking these are very special personalities, right? Being born in pure families, like Bhakti Charu Maharaj, Sanatana Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, Madhavendra Puri, obviously. But what are the chances for me, right? Like yesterday, Sutapa Prabhu said that many devotees complained that his classes tend to be depressing because he, you know, he's giving very high level and it seems to be really unattainable. But I spoke with the devotees and I wanted to give a little illustration of how someone being born in completely, you know, ordinary or even less than ordinary family and having, you know, less than ordinary life and having zero advantages can become a pure devotee by the mercy of Guru Krishna and Vaishnavas. And this story is connected to one elderly lady, and I found out that not many devotees here heard about her. Her name is was Pada Sevanam. Yeah, some devotees know. How many of you never heard of this lady? Please raise your hands. Okay, so most of you. And so, yes, yeah, she comes from former Soviet Union, from, you can say, Russia, even though it's not Russia, it's Azerbaijan. So from Baku, coincidentally, this was the place of my birth. So actually, my Guru Maharaj said, this is your main qualification, being born in Muslim family in Muslim country. You know, recipient, because, you know, mercy of the Lord Chaitanya is meant for the most fallen. So, and this lady, she actually joined very late. She was apparently in her late 60s when she joined the movement. And I've actually saw her. I had little interaction with her on my own, and when we were visiting that temple with Indradyumna Maharaj in our travels. And she's been, you know, kind of eccentric lady, pretty jolly. But, you know, you could never suspect anything special about her. But later we found out that it was different. And so she joined because she, you know, came across someone distributing Prabhupada's books, so she purchased Bhagavad Gita, read that Bhagavad Gita, and she came to the temple for the very first time. And she looked like, you know, the lady from the past century, you know, dressed in a fancy way with this huge hat, you know. And so you can imagine, you know, elderly lady dressed like that, so she came to the temple. And the devotee who was in charge of guest reception brought her to the room where they spoke to the guests. And so normally we're not necessarily looking for devotees like that joining the movement, right? Because we don't really think that they can contribute in any substantial way. And then, you know, this devotee spoke with the guests, and then he had to step out for a short time for whatever reason. And when he came back, he saw that this lady with the hat, she's like vigorously preaching to everybody, referring to Bhagavad Gita. She says, this is what Bhagavad Gita says, and this is what Bhagavad Gita says, and everybody was like mesmerized listening to her. And the devotee was thinking, wow, that's never happened, that a guest coming for the very first time to the temple is preaching so enthusiastically to everybody else. And then after a short while, she came, and, you know, she had a good life apparently, and her children and even grandchildren grew up, so they lived separately. So she had that huge apartment to herself, which, you know, she didn't really need. And she wanted to stay with devotees, so she came to the temple, And she said, I want to live in the temple. And I sold my apartment. And I'll give you all this money, you know, a lot of money, right? But just give me one little room. That's going to be enough for me. And the devotees were like really impressed. They didn't even have extra room, but they made an exception. They built an extension to the temple. It's simple, simple place. Didn't even had conveniences inside, right? Attached facilities. Everything was outdoor, detached, right? So she also had to, and you know, no flush toilets, you know, it's like simple place. So she lived pretty austere life in the temple. And got initiated, got the name Padasevanam, and then she seemed to be eccentric because she was worshipping deity, but it was not like or regular deity. It was actually a children's doll painted blue. And so, and she named this doll Gopal. And so basically, this was her first worshipable deity. And she was so much into worshipping Gopal. And certain things were like little unusual because one time she bought, you know, this radio-controlled toy car. And then she put her Gopal into this toy car. So Gopal was driving around the temple yard. And the devotees were asking, you know, what are you doing? What kind of worship is this? And she said, it's not any worship. It's just Gopal is boy, so he wants, you know, entertainment. So I'm just entertaining him. Things like that. And then, you know, the devotee who told the whole story, he's my friend and he's in charge of that area. Keshav Maharaj. And then he said, when I came first and devotees introduced me to her, they said, this is our granny. She lives with us. And then she came and, you know, when they spoke, she was like really feeling that she's checking him out, asking him different questions. So, but after a while, he felt that he passed the test. And then she pulled out the apple and she said, Gopal told me to give this apple to you. You know, it's like everything she was doing, it was Gopal told me. That was her mantra, you know. And then after a while, she said, yeah, and actually some of you who've been around longer, you might remember this documentary movie from Dhruva Prabhu, from his pilgrimage to Nrsingadev temples in South India. So that lady saw that movie. And then one temple there, in Karnataka, Lakshmi Nrsingadev temple, I believe, it was really neglected. You know, that if you remember, there is a temple where you have to go through the water actually to get the darshan. So, and they used to worship the deity like once a week, maybe Sundays or something, whatever. Everyone was coming, Pujari was coming, so they were doing this worship. And Dhruva tells, you know, this is one temple on the hilltop, and it just opened once a week because, you know, it's like really hard to access and it's in a very remote place. So she saw that movie and she started telling everyone, you know, poor Nrsingadev, that he's worshipped only once a week and then he's staying there alone, you know, all the rest of the time by himself. Nobody worships him, nobody feeds him, you know, like, I have to go there and serve Nrsingadev, save Nrsingadev. And the devotees were thinking, oh, you know, some kind of strange idea. But then she was telling everyone, no, I'm going there. I'll be serving Nrisingadev. Nobody wants to serve him. I'll serve him. And then Kesho Maharaj comes to that place, and she comes to him, and she says, I'm planning to go to India to serve Nrisingadev. You know, it's not like, should I or should not I? I am going, right? That was her mood. As we know, utsaham nishchaya, right? After enthusiasm comes determination, right? So she was so enthusiastic, and she was really determined. Whatever she set her mind on, she had to do, that's it. And then Maharaj started telling her, no, you know, it's like this place in the middle of nowhere. And she was 74 by the time. And he said, you know, who will take care of you? And she said, what are you talking about? Who will take care of me? Gopal will take care of me. He always did throughout all these years. Why do you think he cannot take care of me now? He's my son. Then he was telling her, no, that, you know, trying to talk her out. And then she said, okay, I'll ask Gopal. And whatever Gopal tells, I'll do. And then, you know, Maharaj said, I'm praying, please, Gopal, tell her not to go. But it never happened. She came back. She said, no, Gopal confirmed. Gopal said, no, we have to go and take care of Nrisingadev. And so, you know, Maharaj is saying, well, this is so difficult. Anyway, that it will not happen because she doesn't have any money, so how she will go. But then somehow she came up with the money, and she purchased the ticket, and she thought, okay, I'm going. I just need someone to show me the place. And so Maharaj connected with one devotee from Baku who lives in Vrindavan. And he told him the story and, you know, can you pick up this granny from the airport and maybe bring her to Vrindavan and send, you know, let her stay in Vrindavan for a while, send her back to the temple. He says, fine. So he comes, picks her up, and he says, you know, we will be going to Vrindavan because I live in Vrindavan. She said, no, I didn't come to India to go to Vrindavan. I came here to go to, you know, that Karnataka Nrisingadev temple. He says, it's fine. You know, because everybody knows she's like super stubborn. You know, you can't talk her out, no chance. So he decided to take a trick, to do a trick. He said, let's go to Vrindavan for a while. And, you know, because Vrindavan is just a few kilometers away from here, just a few hours drive. And this is the place, you know, main place of Krishna's pastimes. You don't want to miss the opportunity. And then after that, we'll go. She said, no. How can I waste my time? Nrisingadev is suffering there. And I'll be enjoying in Vrindavan? No chance. You have to take me there. If you don't want to take me there, just show me, you know, how to get to domestic airport, help me with the ticket. If you don't want to help me with the ticket, I'll find. And she doesn't speak any English anyway, right? She only speaks Russian and her language, Azerbaijani. And, you know, no matter what they tell her, she just doesn't refuse, doesn't budge an inch. So then he's thinking, okay, you know, like, if I just drop her, she'll get lost, you know, she'll have problems, so let me go with her. So he buys tickets. And before that, he checked it out. He actually flew there, and he went to that place, and it was in the middle of, you know, the road is through the jungle, etc., you know, all the snakes and tigers and you name it, everybody's there. So he thought it's a crazy idea for her to go there. So they've decided to talk her out. And anyway, she said, I'm going. If you're not going to assist me, I don't need you. Gopal will take care of me. So he says, okay, let's fly there. And his hope is that, you know, when we arrive there, when she will see how difficult it is, how dangerous it is, she will change her mind. So they arrive there, and it's like Pujari is staying in the village at the bottom of the hill. And so he takes him to Pujari, and he tells him, you know, this granny, she just had an idea that she wants to serve Nrisingadev. And they were telling her, you know, it's South India. Like, in ISKCON, because of Prabhupada's leniency and because it's Western world, you know, ladies are also allowed to serve the deities, but not in South India. I mean, it's like so strict in terms of tradition and standards. No women are allowed to serve the deities, right? So no one will allow you to serve the deities. And anyway, if you go there, so there is no point. And she said, whatever Gopal allows, it will happen. You know, her thing was, Gopal told me, that's it. And then, you know, he brings her to this Pujari and he tells him this whole story. And Pujari's eyes go big and he says, how this is possible? We're a little bit over time, but would you like to hear the rest of the story? Yeah. Okay. All right. So, that's a good news. Yeah. And so, Pujari tells her, this is same thing, you know. It's really dangerous. There is no one to take care of you. You'll be up the hill, etc., etc. And she says, I don't need any care. I have Gopal, so I'll be fine. Just take me there. If you don't take me there, I'll find my way myself. So the Pujari, you know, holds on to his head. He says, okay, I don't know who is this lady, but, you know, I cannot stop her, so I guess we'll have to go up the hill. So their last hope is that, you know, it's like nothing, just the temple, and a little, you know, run-down, ruined house next to the temple with no facilities at all. And so their last hope, she will go up there. She will realize how difficult it is for her to live there. She'll give up the idea. So they bring her up the hill, and she's ecstatic. She says, well, this is, you know, I thought there was only temple, but here is this very nice house. I'll stay there. And so they were saying there is nothing, no water, no toilet, no this, no that. She said, it's fine, you know, forest is there, river is there, you know, some stream, river stream. I'll get the water, etc., etc. For cooking, I'll get the wood, and so I'll cook, etc. And so Pujari can't believe it. And so they actually, and she says, you don't have to worry. Gopal will take care of the rest of the stuff. You just go. I'm fine. Thank you for bringing me here. And, you know, Pujari is going back to his village, and he's bringing all the villagers together. And he says, I don't know what's happening, but this strange lady came, and she wants to worship Nrisingadev every day, and no matter what, how it hard we tried, she didn't want to, you know, change her mind. So she's like over 70 and she's there alone on the top, and, you know, I don't think she will survive. So I guess we will all have to go and somehow make some arrangements for her, right? So they go up there, and she actually says that this house is for Gopal. I'll stay out under the tree. Right? And then they go and they put some tent for her. So she's staying in that tent. Gopal stays in that house. So, and they bring things. So they try to make some arrangements for her. And then, you know, she starts worshipping Nrisingadev. And all the people, you know, this news spreads like a wildfire. And everyone hears about this very saintly elderly lady from Muslim country who came all the way just to worship our Nrisingadev. And so all the people started coming to the temple. So it's like every day there are crowds of people coming to the temple. And she's like ecstatic, you know, receiving all the guests. And she doesn't even speak any language, right? Any local language. But everybody understands her because, you know, she's so expressive that, you know, everybody knows what she's talking about. And then, to cut the long story short, very soon the news about it, about this unbelievable lady, reaches all the way to the chief minister of the Karnataka. And then he comes, you know, with all the entourage, etc. And so he goes up the hill, and then he saw that lady and heard that her story, and he turns to everyone and he says, "This is unbelievable. We call ourselves Krishna's devotees, but what do we do for Krishna? We live in luxurious houses, we have such nice facilities, and look how we treat our Krishna, right? But she is a real devotee. So she gave up everything for the sake of Krishna. And so this is just a reminder to ourselves, you know, just a wake-up call for us. So I think this is Krishna's desire to sort it out. And therefore, I'm taking personal responsibility to fix everything here, to build a road and all the facilities, a nice house for this lady, brick house. And so he is doing all these arrangements. And, you know, since then, this temple is, every day there are so many people coming to that, to this temple. And then, you know, there were so many things happening, you know, like she became so popular. She became like a local saint, actually. Some video footage of her is available on YouTube. You can just, you know, type Pada Sevanam, Mataji, Nrisingadev, South India, you'll find those video clips. And you can see that people are treating her like a saint, inviting her for the weddings, for the funerals, for this and that. You know, bless the house, you know, like someone is sick, please cure, you know, bless that person to get cured, etc. And she's like, you know, people come, touch her feet. And she doesn't, you know, she doesn't display like artificial humility. But you can see that she is really humble. Someone comes and starts like doing kirtan in the temple, and she bows down to that person, pays obeisances to that person, cries and pays obeisances. And one thing which was very interesting, in the beginning I didn't mention that everybody was thinking that she might be, you know, kind of in a sahaja mood or whatever. But one thing was very interesting. She never got into any politics. And at that time, in this temple, there were like different politics, power struggle happens. And she never got involved. And she never spoke ill of any devotee. So she's been like very loving and caring towards everyone with zero discrimination. So that made them feel, no, there is something genuine. It's not just she's, you know, faking it. It's real. That it's actually that Gopal tells her, and that she only does what Gopal tells her. And then she served this deity for a number of years. And then at some point, yeah, the pujari, the head pujari is telling like different stories. One story he told, that this, you know, he went up the hill, checked on her, so she was doing fine, you know, in the early days. And then he was going down the hill, and then he is hearing, you know, like screaming and some, you know, noise, like pots falling on the floor, you know, thrown on the floor, something like that, something strange. So he's thinking, what is this? Then next time he's going up the hill, he's asking what happened. So he was thinking maybe monkey went into the kitchen. She was trying to chase the monkey away, throwing some pots into the monkey or whatever. And then he asked her, you know, there was this noise last time. What was that? And she said, oh, nothing special. Nrisingadev was refusing to take prasadam, so I got really mad at him. Quarreling with Nrisingadev. Figure that one out. Who can dare to quarrel with Nrisingadev? Even the Hiranyakashipu failed. And then another time, you know, it was really dangerous in the early days because there was no water, no facilities on the compound. So she had to walk like a couple of miles to the nearest stream to get water for bathing, for, you know, cooking, drinking, whatever. And then there were a lot of poisonous snakes, cobras, in that area. And actually, while she was walking through the jungle, cobra bit her on the leg. And she came back, and she came to Nrisingadev, and she said, if you want me to go back home, back to Godhead, because of this cobra bite, I am fine. But if you want me to stay and continue serving you, then tell me, what can I do now? And she said, Nrisingadev told me, just flush this wound with Charanamrita and you will be fine. And then she did that and nothing happened to her. Cobra's bite, I mean, you know, king cobra, it's a serious thing. Especially, you know, counting her age. Nothing happened. And so then she continued serving. And at some point, you know, one fine morning, they came. And she was worshipping her Gopal deity on the chair. You know, she was not into, like, sophisticated arrangements. She would put Gopal on the chair, and then she would dress him and feed him on the chair like that. And then one morning they come, and they can see that she is, you know, standing on her knees next to the chair, and her head is on the chair at the feet of the deity. And she holds Bhagavad Gita in her hand as well. And so they were thinking maybe she fell asleep worshipping the deity. And then, you know, someone touched her and they've realized she's gone. So left her body with Bhagavad Gita in the hand and the head at the feet of the deity, which is, you know, the perfect illustration to your name, Padasavanam, right? Because Padasavanam means serving the Lord's feet. No, Gopal deity, her deity. But then she served Nrisingadev as well every day. So it's just a story which illustrates that, you know, there is no bar to anyone becoming perfect. No bar of, you know, background or age or qualification, you know, knowledge, nothing. Nothing is required to attain perfection, just devotion. So three things are most important. I was thinking that, you know, Sutapa Prabhu really likes this systematic approach. So we can say that the rule of three S is the most essential for attaining perfection in Krishna consciousness. First S and foremost is sincerity. And second S is seriousness. And third is service. So if we sincere and seriously serve the Lord, so as this story illustrates, there is nothing impossible. Hare Krishna. That's the confirmation. All right. So if anyone has any comments or questions or anything you want to say, you're welcome to share. Srinivas Brahma.
So she was from an ISKCON temple. She took initiation from
Rohini Sutta Prabhu, yeah, ISKCON Guru.
Okay. So she was looking over that temple where no one was serving for many years, looking after Narasingadev. So is ISKCON overseeing that temple now, or someone else?
No, they just traditionally worship Narasingadev in that temple. It's not that it was given to ISKCON, but you know, she started the whole thing. And she was preaching about ISKCON to everybody. You know, they were asking, you know, who are you, where you came from? She was saying, I'm from ISKCON, this and that, what is ISKCON? So many people learned about ISKCON just because of her in there.
So it's daily worship now, it's not just once a week, as it, they didn't revert or anything.
Sorry?
They didn't revert back to the once a week.
No. Now it's like crowded every single day, so many people come to this temple. It became like super popular. All right. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for sharing that wonderful, wonderful story. It's quite, we could say, coincidence, His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj actually shared that same story.
Really?
At a retreat in Croatia. Wow. And the second time we went there, the last time we were there. Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, this story is really powerful. One devotee told that her husband, you know, relaxed in his spiritual practices, stopped chanting japa for a couple of years. And she said, once he came across this story, he started crying, picked up his beads, and continued chanting from this point onwards. So that brought him back to his Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he was nearly gone. All right. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Sanatana Goswami ki jai. Shri Bhakti Charu Maharaj ki jai, Pada Sevana Mataji ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande.